In March 1979, the nation focused its attention on Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
3 Mile Island blew down their lines. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down.
There was a sentiment that things nuclear were bad, and that was confirmed in a dramatic way at 3 Mile Island in 1979 with the meltdown that occurred there.
Nuclear power seemed like something in the future that you could stop, and nuclear weapons were too pervasive, too real, too overwhelming. People didn't quite want to turn to it and deal with it. So we were fighting an uphill battle to even get our allies to take these issues on.
Welcome to Return to the Nuclear Crossroads, the history of protest at Rocky Flats, our local nuclear weapons plant. In part two, we listen back to the years between 1979 and 1983. Demonstrations grew to tens of thousands of people. The Freeze Movement was born, and in one huge gathering, people attempted to encircle Rocky Flats. I'm David Wilson, your host for Return to the Nuclear Crossroads.
I think it was a bit of a confused movement.
In 1979, Chet Chizesky was organizing for the Rocky Flats Truth Force in preparation for another April demonstration and civil disobedience at the birthplace of the plutonium triggers for each U.S. nuclear weapon. They would follow almost a year to the day since the last major protest that led to a 9-month occupation of the railroad tracks into the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant.
The strength of the anti-nuclear power movement in New England certainly had an impact on anti-nuclear sentiments, but I think it took some work on the part of the movement to open the public's mind enough to understand the difference between nuclear power and nuclear weapons.
People like Chris Bove would create one of the links between the differing elements in the anti-nuclear movement.
In 1976, I went to Bennington College. I was in the science department. Every single member of the science department at Bennington participated in the first anti-nuclear action at Seabrook in 1977. That was my introduction to the anti-nuclear movement.
Thousands of people were arrested trying to stop the Seabrook nuclear reactor in New Hampshire from opening. Rocky Flats would soon ride the wave of large-scale civil disobedience.
Both processes are dangerous. They require enormous amount of wealth, a concentration of wealth, and both processes create a lot of pollution. So I think the anti-nuclear movement, whether it's weapons or nuclear energy, is an environmental movement. It's about not polluting.
On April 28, 1979, 15,000 people showed up to rally against Rocky Flats. Several big-name musicians arrived to play and protest Rocky Flats and other nuclear sites around the country.
We go anywhere. Just show us a nuke, we show up.
Holly Near.
There ain't nowhere you can run, no, 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 I ain't nowhere you can run. You got it? I ain't nowhere.
Bonnie Raitt.
I'd like to bring up Jackson to play one of his songs. I'd like to dedicate it to the residents of Broomfield and tell them not to drink the water anymore.
Of cynics would say, well, those people don't really care about Rocky Flats or the arms race. They just came out to hear their musicians.
Ellen Claver, a Truth Force spokesperson.
Well, maybe some people did only come out to hear those musicians, but what did those musicians say in between their songs? Those musicians were very committed, and I think they couldn't help but transmit some of that commitment to the people who came just to hear them.
Bonnie Raitt.
And I think that with grassroots, there's a potential to organize this country around stopping nuclear power and hopefully nuclear weapons. There's a climate of it, of stopping it, and it's perfect because it's right before the election. So if we can get everybody organized through these rallies, of course, it's the first time since the 60s that people have been up in arms, excuse the pun, about something. I think it's real exciting because it sort of cuts across liberals and conservatives or old people and young people. It's a grassroots, energy, something that we all use, and the sun is the only thing that nobody owns yet. So if we can hurry up and get solar energy,
they're working on that. They're working on a way of putting a meter on it.
Uncle Sol and Auntie Nuke.
You know, it doesn't cost anything. That's good.
Welcome back here, winter soldiers.
Dan Aylesberg was back on stage and soon to be on the railroad tracks. Since the Year of Disobedience trial ended, Aylesberg had gone about trying to get Rockwell International to make more public what they did at Rocky Flats. He even bought Rockwell stock to voice his demands at a stockholders meeting held in Dallas.
Of massive nuclear war, this plant is in no other business than to add to the deterrent capabilities we had sufficient of 20 years ago, to add the capability to initiate nuclear war, that is, to initiate genocide. No American, no human being should be in that business. Well, anyway, I went home from Dallas, found a little memento from the Rockwell Corporation for me, my dividend check from Rockwell for my shares. It's kind of a capitalist registration card. Well, we know what to do with that.
Congresswoman Pat Schroeder also spoke at the rally, bringing out one of the key concerns for many of the protest organizers.
This is a very, very serious issue. Yesterday, we held hearings all day long in the federal building on conversion.
The Department of Energy was finally addressing economic conversion after 4 years of dust gathering on the Lamworth Task Force recommendation to close and convert Rocky Flats. People like Judy Danielson of the Rocky Flats Action Group worried the government still wouldn't take the idea serious and would end up saying things were just fine as they were at Rocky Flats.
Well, let me just say a few words. We're very interested in the conversion of the Rocky Flats plant, not only the closing of it, because these nuclear weapons are only part of a system that oppresses people. Jobs are very important. We cannot just ignore them. The most important resource at this plant over here is the workers. There are 3,400 workers there. A lot of the parts of the plant are contaminated.
Ham Solo.
From the very beginning, opened conversations with the Kelly brothers, who were then the union leaders at the plant, and expressed directly to them that we had certain goals and objectives, but we didn't want to achieve those at their expense, and in fact were very concerned about their health and safety. They thought we were, good-hearted, I think, but totally naive.
Doing any work with radioactive materials that could be taken down or parts could be taken away, and they could be reused in some productive fashion. But the workers have the right to help determine what other jobs that they could do.
Hi, my name is Nancy Wood, and it's beautiful to see all your wonderful faces out here today. I want to tell you that my husband, for 2 years, worked here at Rocky Flats. And the way we have found to convert his work is for him to take his very needed machinist skills and begin his own small business. It's going to be a long time before it's really off the ground, but at least when he works on something now, he knows what it's going to. He knows what work is being done and that it's socially purposeful work. Conversion can be done, and it must be done on the wider social scale.
Those working to close and convert Rocky Flats maintained an uneasy situation with the workers at the plant. Some bridges were built, especially between Truth Force members and the security forces that arrested them. They often knew each other by first name. But a real division erupted when anti-nuclear activists like Dan Ellsberg and Helen Caldicott aimed blame on the workers.
And I heard that smelly government helicopter drowning out the noise.
Helen Caldicott, noted Australian doctor, rejuvenated Physicians for Social Responsibility, focusing on the health effects of everything nuclear, along with challenging U.S. nuclear weapons policy.
The men are getting tumors in their testicles. They're dying of testicular cancer. There is plutonium in their reservoir down there. And people at Broomfield are drinking water from the reservoir. And we're killing ourselves so we can make atomic bombs.
In a closing comment that would sting for years, Caldicott referred to the Rocky Flats operators and policymakers as murderers. Workers took this as a personal insult. Pam Solo.
When Helen Caldicott demonized the workers there, it was enormously counterproductive and harmful to our longstanding relationships that we were building.
The stress of her argument was based on fear.
Jack Cohen-Joppa, a member of the Rocky Flats Truth Force and now publisher of Nuclear Resistor.
So I heard her say in the early 1980s, if Reagan is reelected in 1984, hang it up. We just as well forget it. You've got to get involved now because otherwise they'll destroy the world. And I thought, well, this could be real disempowering to a young person particularly.
On the day following the rally of 15,000, over 300 people took part in one of the largest single-day civil disobediences ever at Rocky Flats. Affinity groups split off to block both the east and west roadway entrances into the plant, while Rocky Flats Truth Force members and others returned to the railroad tracks. After last year's occupation of the tracks and hundreds of arrests, the security forces were prepared.
Do you anticipate arresting us today?
We'll see about that.
The United States government property of the Department of Energy. You are not allowed by law to come onto this property. If you do,
let me say this. I say now that you are in fact trespassing on government property. And we're going to afford you the opportunity to retreat and avoid arrest.
You're under arrest.
Sir, you're under arrest.
While Truth Force members were hauled off the tracks, a Buddhist monk named Sawada drummed and chanted nearby. He created rhythms that would resonate through the area for years to come.
Katsuzo Sawada. I'm Japanese Buddhist monk.
In the form of a round.
Like people of Truth Force, they are doing occupy on the railroad tracks. And I could see, that time, I could see spirit of people. People could change this country with non-violence movement. Since that, I have been participate many peace movement. Always reminds me about Truth Force. Truth Force encourage me, my activity keeping on. And Truth Force, that is not only name of organization. Truth Force, it's a power. Truth Force is a Mahatma Gandhi started. Satyagraha means people believed in truth. So if we really touched with truth, that power effect to one to another.
Roy Young, a Rocky Flats Truth Force spokesperson, yelled through barred windows as U.S. Marshals finished loading the rest of the Truth Force off the railroad tracks into nearby buses.
Make it 300! We think the power of the people is what will ultimately close Rocky Flats and other facilities like this. And until we end this, we're going to be back and back again with more and more people. They can't find enough rooms in all the jails to find all the people. We'll snap nuclear weapons and nuclear power until they find out what it does.
Join the hockey pokey.
The 300 people arrested on April 29, 1979, exceeded all those of 1978, the year of the occupation of the railroad tracks. But now the government was playing hardball. The cases would be heard at the federal level rather than through the more lenient county court in Jefferson County, where Rocky Flats resides. Chet Chizeski.
A series of very high-profile trials. All were convicted except a very few got off on technicalities. Incidentally, too, one of the things that's sort of being talked about, ironically, is that as a result of that trial in the spring of 79, almost $750,000 in fines were paid. Well, some of us have been talking about the new evidence that was uncovered by the FBI and the Justice Department a decade later in calling for a new trial. And the return, at least, of the overturning of those convictions and the return of those fines with interest from the federal government. Lawyers tell me that's not likely to happen, but...
Sitting on the railroad tracks.
Once more, higher.
Just sitting on the railroad tracks. No more trains, radioactive trains, in or out of Rocky Flats.
Snowstorm, windstorm, rain, and hail.
To move us off, you gotta throw us in jail. Sitting on the railroad tracks.
We were going great in 1978, really.
Dan Ellsberg.
Thanks to Rocky Flats, I think we felt, we had the Rocky Mountain News, remember in November at the end of our trial saying, whatever you think of these protesters and what they did, one truth is clear, Rocky Flats must go. Editorial in the Rocky Mountain News in November of 78. And that we were moving pretty well, at which point in 79, 80, with the loss of the Shah of Iran and the loss of Nicaragua, to Carter, the man who came in to abolish nuclear weapons, as he said, and I think believed that, in fact, shifted to an arms race, used at the end of that year an excuse for what he'd been building up all year, the arms race, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and we in the anti-nuclear movement, which was, for its first year, was doing enormously better than the anti-Vietnam movement had done, was hit by a tidal wave that lasted for years.
The protesters did have one victory. President Carter was backing off the building of the neutron bomb at Rocky Flats. In its place, however, came numerous new nuclear weapon systems like the Pershing and cruise missiles, eventually bound for Europe. People like Pam Sola from the American Friends Service Committee responded to President Carter's buildup in nuclear weapons with a campaign to halt production at present stockpile levels.
In 78, we knew that as part of making Rocky Flats a national issue, we had to include as part of that a demand or a call or a campaign that would call the question on U.S.-Soviet relationships, that you couldn't end the nuclear arms race and close Rocky Flats without dealing with our enemy, and that we were going to have to start talking about the Cold War. A small group of us went in 1979 to the Soviet Union with a specific mission of saying, if we mobilize and propose a mutual halt, will you respond? You know, the Soviets at that point gave indications that if the United States would propose such a mutual halt, that they would engage in negotiations around that proposal. So we came home and in 1980 formed a national conference and started mobilizing around the freeze proposal.
In 1980, in yet another Rocky Flats rally attended by over 15,000 people, Pam Solo announced the birth of the nuclear freeze movement to the nation.
For the third year in a row, we are here. We are here to call for the closing and conversion of the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. By now, Rockwell International and the Department of Energy should have the message that we will not go away. We are initiating here today, not yet brought up anywhere in this nation, a proposal for a freeze on nuclear weapons at the present level.
In essence, because some of us who are the key players in the freeze went to Rocky Flats, that's where we rolled it out. You know, Colorado, Denver's my home. It was the place that I was most committed to closing to save, you know, what's so precious there in the Rocky Mountain area.
The autumn mist in a land called nuclear free. Oh, the magic dragon lived by the sea and
finally has to be government property. Are you prepared to do that?
The arms race go hungry around the world.
Okay, you're under arrest.
Hundreds of arrests occurred in 1980, as they did in 1979, as protesters again blocked the entrances into Rocky Flats. Meanwhile, AFSC organizers like Judy Danielson and Pam Solo were championing a new conversion campaign strategy.
I'm proposing another positive step that we all can take to convert Rocky Flats is this little green flyer that you might be seeing around the crowds today. Now, this thing says, "The buck stops here." It has a dollar bill on the front. We're aiming to form a conversion fund that the state can tap into to find out how we can convert all these jobs at Rocky Flats.
Rocky Flats activists managed to get an economic conversion fund initiative on the ballot in 1982, receiving around 40% in favor. It drew Colorado's attention even more towards Rocky Flats. The state government would eventually take notice. Chet Chizeski was now working on Rocky Flats issues for the American Friends Service Committee.
By 1982, the nuclear freeze movement had begun to grow nationwide in really dramatic rise in concern about nuclear weapons at the early years of the first Reagan administration. There was a march in Washington, D.C. at the second U.N. special session on disarmament. It was the biggest political demonstration in the history of the country. There were a million people in Central Park. That same month, I think June 1982, there was a peace rally, not directly connected to Rocky Flats because of the influence of its primary inspiration, John Denver, who offered to bring some of his musical friends to Denver, and in John Denver's very conciliatory way managed to get the governor to allow us to use the state capitol, where 40,000 people came to what essentially, in my view, was a concert by John Denver and several other performers associated with Colorado. But it really was focused on peace in a very otherwise heated time.
Colorado, Rocky Mountain High. I've seen it rain.
Between 1982 and 1983, then, there felt like the anti-nuclear movement really had strength and that we could influence policy in Washington and even in Moscow, maybe. Fall of 1983, then, we decided that we needed another high-profile event at Rocky Flats, but that it didn't need to be so militant. It should be inclusive and creative. And the idea of encircling the plant was something that seemed like a real challenge, but doable. Our calculations that it would take about 20,000 people with their arms stretched out to cover the 16-mile perimeter on the public roads around Rocky Flats, and we thought we could do that.
The encirclement happened Sunday, October 15th, 1983. KGNU provided live coverage. It was a first for the community radio station, as Bob McFarland spoke with Congresswoman Pat Schroeder.
It's a real nice day, and I'm real glad that somebody gave me a jacket, because the wind is kind of cold. But here comes Pat, with Andrea blocking the wind. The studio is nice. Welcome.
Well, it certainly is interesting. Have you ever done this before?
No, this is a first for us. And
it looks like kind of a painting, doesn't it? You're sitting out here in all the grass, and people building their jacket tents around us so you can talk into the microphone and be heard. It's great.
Can I come in there? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Okay. Hi, Pat. I have a question. What is the mood in Congress right now concerning the nuclear freeze and is their response to the kind of protests or the kind of events like what is happening out there today?
Well, I think the mood in Congress is going back and forth like a pendulum. A lot of people keep hoping that these things are just passing fancies and that they will pass, and so that they can kind of duck and wink and it will all go away. And I think that when you see the phenomenal momentum and the size of demonstrations such as today, the message to politicians is clearly it is not going away, it is very serious, and people want something done.
Chris Bove.
And I came from Gardner, Colorado, southern Colorado, next to the San Luis Valley, and 80% of the Gardner School staff, including the janitors, came up for the encirclement. And that's a public school, yeah, and we took a, the principal was there, and it was really emotional.
We are going to go back out live to the Rocky Flats site. We're going to be having an interview with Pam Solo.
Pam, who is now the national coordinator for the American Friends Service Committee, could you tell us a little bit about the rest of the peace demonstrations around the world and around the country?
Next weekend, about 120 that we know of so far, demonstrations will take place all across the United States. This weekend here at Rocky Flats kicks off these nationwide demonstrations, which are timed to coincide with demonstrations throughout Western Europe. The mood in Europe is very intense. The people in each of the five deployment countries in significant majorities oppose the deployment of the new missiles. And we'll see that, the massive numbers, up to 2 million, may demonstrate in West Germany alone over the next 10 days.
Ira Chernis.
Extremely challenging logistical problem of how do you coordinate people who are spread out over, what is it, 16 square miles? Or the perimeter, I guess, was, I don't know, 14, 15 miles?
17 miles.
Wow. And so the only way really to coordinate it was everybody listening to the radio.
Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what's happening out there? I can hear a helicopter in the background.
That's right, you can hear helicopters, and if you're out here, you can hear trucks, buses, planes. Anyway, I'd like to give you an update on traffic, if that's okay.
Please do.
People listening on 93, still trying to come in from Boulder, stay with it, but when you get to the intersection of 128, please go south.
Well, for those who are listening, this is about your last chance to get in your car and come out here. And so if you're still at home in Boulder or Denver, you'll get here in time to participate in a very historic event. And
it's absolutely critical that people take the time and spend the energy to come here. Politicians will not take action unless we, the people, lead the way and send a very clear message about what we want for the future.
Taps would signal to people to make their final arm-to-arm link in their attempt to encircle Rocky Flats. The only area along the perimeter not covered was a stretch along the southeast corner, the most plutonium-contaminated area that people had to face. Again, Ira Chernis.
People were too bunched up, so there weren't enough people to make it around. But as I remember, a lot of the newspapers the next day, they gave it front page coverage, yeah. But it was protesters failed to encircle Rocky Flats, and there were certainly enough people to have done it if it had been spread out sufficiently. And, of course, if all the people who didn't go because they were concerned about the health problems had gone, then there were...
Mary Hay.
People came up to me. I mean, I actually consider the failure to cover that last mile and a half or whatever it was to have been helpful, because people would say to me, because they knew I was so involved in it, they said, "Oh, you own. If I had known it was going to be that close, I would have come."
Following the encirclement, Chet Chizesky joined five others to form the Rocky Mountain Peace Center, a new focal point for Rocky Flats' direct actions.
It was shortly after that when I think the frustration began to build, because the efforts of disarmament legislators in Washington and their failure to get even a liberal Congress to force the president to adopt more conciliatory nuclear weapons policies meant that people felt like they had done what they could, that, you know, we had achieved an overwhelming popular support in the 70% to 80% supported a nuclear freeze at that point. And yet the Reagan administration managed to ignore it entirely and continue to escalate the arms race. That paralyzed people. They didn't know what to do. And then smaller groups started acting in more frustrated ways.
Welcome to 1984. Are you ready for the Third World War?
You've been listening to part two of Return to the Nuclear Crossroads, a history of Rocky Flats protest. Next time in part three, we focus on the years 1984 to 89, from Freeze Voter to Shutdown 87 to the FBI raid. This program was produced with support from the Needmore Fund and KGNU. Many thanks to Mickey Houlihan, Len Barron, the University of Colorado Archives, David Barsamian, and Kathy Partridge for providing archival recordings. If you have a question or a comment about this program, call the KGNU comment line at 303-447-9911. If you're interested in ordering copies of this program, contact KGNU via mail or phone with your name, address, and telephone number. Mark it Nuclear Crossroads, Attention David Wilson. Our address is P.O. Box 885, Boulder, Colorado 80306, or phone 303-449-4885. For Return to the Nuclear Crossroads and KGNU, I'm David Wilson.